The Tom Woods Show, episode 2149.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I don't know about you, but I am running into a lot of progressives saying, look, police, fire, schools, these are all great examples of socialism. Well, let's focus on that school example. I've got a free ebook called Education Without the State that makes a pretty darn good case for a stateless approach to education. Pick it up at nostateeducation.com. Hey folks, Tom Woods here, talking about COVID and one of those claims that we've been hearing over the past few weeks, namely that COVID is one of the top killers of children in the United States. Now, we know that's not true, but it's interesting to get into why it's not true and then to speculate on why are they saying things that are not only not true, but demonstrably untrue. I don't know what innocent explanations could possibly be left at this point. So remember, of course, the backdrop for all this was the approval for children between ages 6 months and 5 years to receive the shots. So the backdrop was this claim that they are in some kind of special danger from COVID. Incredible that we're still having this conversation, but it's got to be had. And we're having it today with Kelly Cronert, who really was the first person who explained what the problem was with this data leading to this conclusion. And she's not part of the public health apparatus. She has some corporate experience, and she's a knowledgeable person, but she's just a regular American, just like me in that sense. I don't have any specialized knowledge in this area, but I can read a chart, and I can generally avoid making embarrassing mistakes about something that's in my own field, which is something we can't really seem to say, for whatever reason, about the public health establishment. So Kelly runs the website COVID-Georgia.com, but of course our conversation will go well beyond simply the state of Georgia. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, let's get into your detective work here, which is detective work that you would think a scientist, a journalist, a science writer, anybody in any of these fields or any fields remotely related to them might have done. But first, a little background about yourself. You've been tracking data like this for a couple of years. And by the way, let me add, I put up a YouTube version of these episodes, even though they're just audio. But these days, YouTube, as you know, has become so unreasonable that even though you and I are talking about things that are verifiably true, and that there were verifiable falsehoods put out by the CDC, I still don't dare put that on YouTube because the default is that the CDC is always right, even when it's clearly and obviously wrong. So we'll leave that tangent aside. Were you like the rest of us who, I wasn't any kind of data analyst before this, but something just didn't seem right in early 2020. And I just began looking around to see if there were other ways of looking at things. And I began to think that maybe there was an alternative that wasn't being conveyed to the public. What's your story?
So in early 2020, I got to be honest, I was kind of nervous. I get nervous about medical issues and I wasn't really sure what to think. And so that's why I started just literally recording the Georgia data because at the time, the Georgia COVID data website was pretty sparse. And so it was kind of hard to tell, you know, whether things were getting better or worse or whatnot. So I was like, I'm just going to start writing these numbers down every day in Excel and track them myself, just to kind of give some clarity as far as what was happening. I really just came at it from a completely agnostic, like, I really don't know. I need more data. And I'm kind of a numbers person. So that's what I defaulted to, of like, let's get out Excel and see what happens. And it just kind of grew from there as I, you know, started researching more and seeing what the numbers were doing and talking to other people that were doing this in other states and everywhere else to just kind of get a better handle on things. And then I started really focusing on kids as well as the Georgia data in spring of 2020, like late spring as school was getting out here in Georgia. And I was like realizing, I guess, early that summer, I was like, there may be people that aren't going back in the fall. Like, we definitely are opening schools in the fall, right? And then as that kind of started to unravel, that kind of became the second half of my passion as far as tracking the COVID information is, you know, tracking what was going on in Europe and elsewhere with schools And, you know, I was like, well, once we open in Georgia and people see everything's all right, you know, the rest of the country will open. And obviously, you know, that didn't happen everywhere for quite a while in some places. So that's kind of really what sent me down this path of just, you know, kind of advocating for kids to be able to get back in school and see their friends and be in classes where they're learning, as well as just keep track of what's going on in my local community.
Are you like so many people I've talked to on this show who lost friends over this?
Not too much, I would say. Partly just, you know, I think I was lucky that, you know, most of the people kind of in my close group kind of all have been pretty calm about this, I would say.
Good.
You know, our neighborhood still had a lot of get-togethers.
Good.
And, you know, my family, you know, came and visited. We didn't have a lot of concerns in my immediate circle, at least, I would say.
All right. Well, that's a bit of a comfort. Okay. I will say, though, that even though I haven't really, I wouldn't say I lost any friends, because the sort of people I hang out with tend to be the sort who wouldn't go in for this, although a couple of people did surprise me, but I wouldn't say that we certainly didn't end the friendship over it, but I've heard some really tragic stories. But on the other hand, I've definitely gained some friends during this, because I've, you know, through social media and stuff, made contact with people who were doing good work and got to know them. And some of these are really wonderful people. I'm sure you've had the same experience.
Definitely. There's been definitely a lot of new people I've met through this. And, you know, I've met in person, both people locally in Georgia, as well as people even in other states. So that's been kind of a nice surprise that came out of this.
Now, let's talk about this most recent issue that you've investigated, and that is this claim that COVID is, what were they claiming? Was it the top killer of children? One of the top three, right?
They said it was the top four or five, depending on age.
Four or five. You know, okay.
Being able to say top five made
a good magic number. Yeah.
Media clip.
Yeah.
And they presented it. Three different people, it turns out, at the CDC presented that during both the FDA and the ACIP, the CDC meetings discussing the vaccine. When I first saw the slide, I didn't even realize that was the context. I just saw this random slide get shared on Twitter.
Right. I didn't know that was the context either. So in other words, the idea is, if we panic these people enough, maybe they'll be more likely to go for vaccinating 6 months to 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's very curious to me. I mean, this was a fairly brand new preprint. It had come out 2 weeks prior to these meetings and then was used extensively in multiple presentations by multiple people at the CDC, all emphasizing this top five, you know, fifth leading cause in, you know, a few different contexts. And, you know, like I said, at first I just saw the slide and I didn't know where it came from. And I just instinctively knew that the numbers weren't right. I mean, it wasn't like a weird, that's surprisingly high, I'll have to look into it. Like, I instantly just knew. I'm familiar enough with the pediatric,
right, of course it's false,
top causes of death. I knew what the top five were. I knew that it wasn't in there. So I was like, well, that's weird. I wonder how they, you know, how they played with the numbers to make it come out to that. And so that's why, you know, I looked into it, and a couple people had sent me both the slide that got shared on Twitter, and then someone else had sent me the preprint, which I was like also digging into because it was cited on the slide. And I was like, oh, this is coming from a lot of places all at once. And yeah. So, you know, I started.
Let me, I don't generally interrupt, but I
want to,
because before I forget, as I'm, you know, I'm in middle age now, and if I don't say something, I might forget it. What really astonishes me is simply that the kind of people who are in a position to make a decision about vaccination for kids or for anybody, those people, if they're having this presentation made to them, should be informed enough and honest enough to listen to that claim and say, now hold on just a minute. I'm not an idiot. I'm apparently one of the top public health people in the world. If I'm having this presentation made to me, I know for a fact that's not true, what you're saying about COVID. It's astonishing to me that either one of two options is the case. Either people in that position didn't know and actually thought this was true, or they did know and they just sat silently as the claim was made. I mean, there's no third option.
Yeah. And I mean, the people putting together the presentation, I mean, that's what shocked me when I found out. I mean, the people that put together the preprint, I mean, they have kind of a history of, you know, zero COVID advocacy, lockdown advocacy. So I'm not surprised to see that the preprint made these claims. There's a lot of bad preprints that come out. A lot of them get revised. But the fact that it was picked up so widely by CDC employees who either A, were not knowledgeable enough to know that this data wasn't right, or B, were knowledgeable enough to know it wasn't right and used it anyways.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very troubling. And the preprint listed the rankings two different ways. It actually had both the cumulative COVID deaths and the annualized COVID deaths listed. And the CDC employee or employees that use these in the slides shows the higher of the two numbers, intentionally comparing 26 months of COVID deaths with 1 year of deaths from other causes, which there's just no good reason to do that. And they know they did it. They put cumulative total in the footnote of the slide. So again, and like I have trouble understanding it. I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. So, you know, originally it was like, how could they make this mistake? How could they be this bad at their job? And then, you know, the more I kind of dug into this and looked at it, I was like, it's becoming harder and harder to believe that this could just be a mistake or incompetence. That it sure seems like there was an intentional decision to use the worst possible numbers, even though, you know, logically and scientifically, it really doesn't make sense to compare two completely different time periods.
Yeah, and that really is the key thing. And so that really makes it impossible to believe that it was an innocent mistake. And up until this whole crisis began, I really, maybe not always with government officials, but I really would try to give people the benefit of the doubt, not automatically assume the least charitable possible interpretation. But after 2 years of having nonsense and insanity shoved down my throat, I am no longer willing to extend that courtesy because it doesn't seem merited. Now, at the same time, not the same study, but there was a claim made within the past few weeks by the White House and then following the lead of Jeremy Faust at Harvard Medical School, not ranking the various causes of death for children from 1 to 5, but comparing COVID with the flu.
I debunked that one also.
And you debunked that one also. So let's talk about, because that was also spread. I mean, you know, the White House spreads that claim, so then it gets all over the country. Our friend Dr. Bhattacharya from Stanford had a great piece in the Wall Street Journal unraveling that one. But so what did you do up with that?
So that one as well, ironically, they actually made one of the same mistakes. They made the mistake on that, the same one that they made in the preprint. The other aspect of the preprint on this one that was wrong, besides the time period, was that they compared multiple cause of death data for COVID to underlying cause of death data for other diseases, which basically, you know, in a death certificate, there might be a lot of things listed. Like there's only one on each death certificate, one thing that's the underlying cause of death, but there might be a lot of things that may have contributed or the doctor may have suspected contributed. And so there's the multiple cause of death number is higher for everything. But these rankings were based on underlying cause of death. That's what the preprint said. And they compared it then to multiple cause of death for COVID, even though they said they didn't. And Faust has made that exact same mistake in their preprint. And I mean, before, you know, the op-ed came out as well, I had put up a blog post on that. I had, you know, called out Faust. I had tagged other doctors. And there was a lot of people saying, yeah, you can't do this. You can't compare two different metrics. I mean, that's just not honest science. There's no good reason why you should compare two numbers that aren't based on the same thing. And Faust did since then release an update to his analysis saying, oh, okay, fine. I was called out for using, you know, the multiple cause of death data for COVID. And he kind of rejigged the numbers a little bit. That was my first thing when I saw this slide. This time I was like, I bet they did the same thing Faust did.
Yeah, and sure okay. Enough,
yeah, they did. And then I saw the cumulative versus the single year. So yeah, it was a combination of those two errors this time. But in addition with the flu data, and that obviously impacts this ranking thing as well, is we have never tested for flu like we test for COVID.
Of course,
and
right.
We track things for flu very different than we track for COVID, even if we do the testing. So the CDC specifically says that the number of death certificates that have flu listed on them is a significant undercount. They purposely put out flu estimates that are bigger. Now, Jeremy Faust dismissed those. He said we can't use the estimates. They're too high. Well, maybe they are. Clearly, we've shown the CDC is not very good at math and is willing to put whatever numbers out they feel like makes their point. But we still know that the number that's actually on death certificates is an undercount. There is a reason for that estimate. We can debate the accuracy of the estimate, but we know for a fact that flu is undertested when it is tested for. You know, there's false positives because people don't go in necessarily right away. We certainly aren't testing people who have no symptoms for flu and just to see if they have it like we do for COVID, which we do in a lot of schools, which means kids are unnecessarily, you know, at increased likelihood to be tested. So, I mean, the data just isn't very good to be able to make claims flu versus COVID because we just track them completely different. We just do not follow the same rules. So again, you're talking about two different metrics that just really aren't apples to apples.
I have it in front of me, the Bhattacharya op-ed in the Wall Street Journal refuting this, and he's got three reasons that it's off, and I'll just share the first two of them. And the first one has to do with exactly what you just said about the relative rarity of flu tests, and especially in comparison with COVID ones. And so he gives the statistic that if you look at the 12 months of October 2018 to September 2019 inclusive, you have 1.4 million flu tests. He says, but as of last month, some 897 million COVID tests had been given. 897
yes.
million. So you think that might skew the results a teensy-weensy bit? That's one thing. And then he says, second, even the CDC admits, based on audits of death certificates, that 35% of reported pediatric COVID deaths couldn't actually have been caused by COVID. So we also have that. So that's an inflation of the COVID numbers also. It's incredible what they've, I mean, we know why they must be doing it, because I think they figure that if we can't get you concerned about yourself, surely we can get you concerned about children. But my gosh, it's been so obvious that this is, I'm not even sure how many COVID deaths you can find from children who were not already otherwise extremely unhealthy. It's not to say that their deaths don't count, but the impression that you're given is that everybody is equally at risk, or that, you know, that all children are equally at risk. There is a vastly, vastly greater chance that your child will be killed on the way to school. Maybe a greater chance your child will be killed in school than actually die spontaneously of nothing but COVID.
Yeah, the data is just, and unfortunately, and one of the things I've called for kind of since early on is with these pediatric deaths, is some context around them and somebody looking at these medical records and trying to make some better analysis. That 35% number was from an early MMWR from the CDC. And I believe that was based on the multiple cause of death. So a lot of times where COVID is on the death certificate, but, you know, isn't necessarily listed as the underlying, it's like it's put on there, but then you know, is there a reason it was put on there? Is there just the assumption that COVID made it worse? Do we know that COVID had any impact? I mean, we've seen deaths from car accidents and from other things that, you know, drownings, and you wonder how did COVID, you know, necessarily impact this? Sure, they tested positive for COVID at the hospital, but, you know, we don't really know what role COVID played. And then again, even places where, okay, so maybe COVID did play a role, but let's say it was flu. Would we have ever documented that flu case? You know, chances are, you know, and a lot of times we wouldn't have, especially, you know, if the flu, you know, you had it a couple of weeks prior and you never tested, you know, you just knew you had a cold or you were sick or whatever. And, you know, they say the flu test, a lot of times they're using the rapid test, which, you know, will go negative pretty quickly. Whereas with COVID, a lot of times we're using these PCR testing, which can be positive for months. So you could come in, you know, after a car accident, PCR test positive for COVID from an infection you had 2 months ago. And now they're saying, oh, well, you know, they have COVID on top of this car accident. You know, that probably made the recovery worse or whatever. When we never would have done that with another respiratory disease. You would have just treated the person for the car accident. So the numbers are just, it's very hard to make these comparisons. And with adults, the numbers are so large that, you know, the percentage that, you know, are more questionable becomes a smaller percentage. And kids, the numbers are so small that even a few questionable cases really changes you know, where the numbers fall. And so that's why, especially with children who we know and we have known since the beginning are at lower risk, really should have gotten some increased scrutiny on these death certificates to say, yes, this makes sense, or no, this one really doesn't. When we look at the difference between that multiple cause versus the underlying cause, it's actually now up in the younger kids, the under five, it's something like 40% of death certificates that have COVID on the death certificate, it's not listed as the underlying cause of death. Whereas for adults, that number is more like 10%. So there is a real distinction with young people that is quite different than the situation with adults.
All right, before I go on, let me remind you about an app that's going to make your life way better, that's going to make you well-informed in a short period of time. Sounds kind of like the Tom Woods Show a little bit, doesn't it? But I'm talking about Blinkist, which takes all kinds of nonfiction categories of books and slims those books down for you to just 15 minutes of listening or reading. So you get all the key points, no fluff. I've told you about the old classics they have, like Machiavelli's The Prince and Seneca on Stoicism, but of course also a ton of modern books. For example, The Self-Driven Child, The Science and Sense of Giving Your Kids More Control Over Their Lives. That is perfect for our audience. And then you'll even find on Blinkist Murray Rothbard's book, For a New Liberty. And that's one of the early libertarian books I read that helped put things together for me, that helped me realize that in one area after another, there was a freedom-based answer to what ails us. It's the kind of thing that changes your life when you read it. And that's the kind of title you'll find many of at Blinkist. Well, right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/woods to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/woods. Eric Weinstein recently said, matter of fact, I see you retweeted it.
Yes, he had a great thread yesterday.
Yes. And just summing up the thread, he says, the advice to vaccinate with really new types of pharmaceuticals should feel like it comes from scientists who are 100% on their game as scientists. Instead, it feels like a call center overseas trying to pressure your widowed great aunt to buy gift cards. That's exactly how it looks.
Yes.
Because we all know that the numbers, that the arguments they're using are all bogus. We all know that. And we all also know, I mean, I would say it is a certainty that the risks to children, and particularly this age, are higher than any potential benefit. I don't see how that's, I don't think that's even debatable. At the very, well, even if it were debatable, that would still mean proceed with caution, if it were debatable. But I think it may, we may be at the point where it's not even debatable.
So I liked his thread a lot. And I was thinking about it last night. And, you know, there's some gifts of like the infomercials where people, you know, it shows people like having trouble pouring milk or putting something away in a cabinet, you know, and it's like this, you know, ridiculous, everything's falling out of the cabinet or spilling everywhere. And I kind of thought about that, like, is from a marketing perspective, that's how you sell things, right? You explain the problem, you show the problem, and then you show how your product is going to fix it. And so that's where I feel like this ranking of cause of death was like that infomercial level exaggeration of, you know, look how bad COVID is for kids. And then, oh, look how good our product, you know, this vaccine is going to be to fix it. When really the evidence that COVID is very bad for kids is pretty suspect. The evidence that this vaccine is going to make a real substantial improvement is pretty weak. You know, I understand them wanting to make the vaccine available to those people who wanted it, but coming out with a recommendation based on this, you know, thinking that, well, COVID is a top killer for children, that this recommendation came out as a kid 6 months and up should get this vaccine. We're already seeing places that are mandating it based on that language from the CDC, makes it a very different picture than making it available to those people who, for whatever reason, desperately want to vaccinate their young kids. So it's just very frustrating because it does kind of feel like you said, you know, the call center, or like I was thinking of the infomercial of like, you know, look how bad this problem is. And, you know, we're all sitting here going, we all know kids that have had COVID. We've all known kids that have tested positive and you wouldn't even know they had anything. You know, obviously I think we'd all be happier if, you know, we didn't have COVID at all, because there certainly has been people that it's made sick, but people are able to see what's around them. They, you know, they can see that this just has not been a major factor for children, no matter how the CDC tries to spin these numbers.
You know, I'm looking at your website, COVID-Georgia.com. Now, obviously, people listening, only so many of them live in Georgia. But the point is, you have a really exemplary site that, you know, could have been copied by anybody for another state. And but what's interesting is when I go there, I'm not overwhelmed by propaganda. And I mean that in a neutral sense, because, you know, what I do, what anybody does in advocacy is technically propaganda. But here, it's all just the numbers. So when I scroll down, I've got hospitalizations in Georgia, test positivity, numbers like that that you've been tracking. Mm-hmm. And so when I go here, it looks like, okay, this is what I'm getting. It's just is the raw numbers that I need to get a handle on what's really happening. Now, I do see under kids and COVID, you have something on pediatric COVID mortality that has to have as its effect calming parents down, which is good. But this looks almost like a neutral site.
I mean, that's been my goal, is I'm trying to just present the numbers here. And I call out, I mean, and I've called out at times where people have given the numbers in the opposite direction. You know, I've tried to just say, look, these are the numbers. Like, you may take, and that's why some people have kind of chastised me for not coming out harder on this issue or being more against things. And I'm saying, all I'm saying is these numbers aren't accurate. Like, they gave numbers that they had to know we're not right. I just don't understand the idea to me. Like, I'm just big on honesty. And so I'm not going to tell you, oh, it's no big deal. No kids have ever been hurt. There's, you know, I mean, I'm just going to tell you, these are the numbers. This is what we have. Make of that what you will. Make your own decisions. I've tried, and I mean, obviously we all have our own biases and our own opinions about things. And that colors we do. But I've tried to say, like, look at things, even when I see things that I'm like, oh, yeah, that's totally what I agree with, still look into it and be like, you know, are those numbers good? Like, do we really have good evidence here? And so obviously, I think the CDC saw these numbers that said, oh, COVID is a top five thing. And they went, yes, that's right. COVID is super bad for kids, and just used it unquestioningly when, A, they should have known those numbers off the top of their head were wrong. And B, they should have said, let's just make sure this analysis is comprehensive and accurate before we put it in all of our presentations. So yeah, I mean, I've tried to keep things. I mean, I'm a numbers person, so I've tried to keep things. These are the numbers. This is the data. Use it how you will.
All right. As we wrap up, let me ask you this question. I'd like to know your preferred sources. Now, I know we all want to get the raw data, and we have various places we can go to get that. But I also want to get commentary, and I also sometimes want to know why such and such claim is false. And there are certain people I rely on for that. I assume you must as well. Are there any people or Twitter accounts or anything like that you rely on to get good, reliable information?
Yeah, I mean, early on Twitter, like, I found some people that kind of definitely helped, you know, confirm when I was looking at the data and I was seeing, you know, everything says, you know, kids are going to be okay. But then you were seeing all this hysteria in the media, you know, some of the accounts that helped, I think, give a pretty clear analysis of the data. There's Dr. Monroe out of the UK. He's a pediatric ID doctor. There's Dr. Vinay Prasad. He's in California and he's an oncologist, but he's looked at a lot of the data. He's good at analyzing these studies and things. So he's been a good source of information, I think. And it just kind of depends. Like, I feel like there's so much about COVID, it's kind of hard to have one account or one person or one website that kind of gives you a good overall view of things. So it's kind of each little piece. You know, if you want to know about kids, you know, there's one direction to go. If you want to know more about this, and that's where kind of my niche has been with this pediatric mortality data, and specifically, you know, recently or whatever. Earlier, it was more kids in schools. But it just kind of has shifted over time with what information I'm trying to find. And unfortunately, that's been the disappointment, is I'd love to be able to say, this website, this news organization, this government, you know, group or whatever, this is where you can get reliable information. And it's been challenging. So much of what you see is just people unquestioningly repeating whatever preferred narrative they have. So it has been frustrating at times to try and sort through the mess of you know, what is believable here? What is the direction I'm, you know, it's a challenge.
No doubt. No doubt. I agree. And I like the people you mentioned also. So I'll on the show notes page for today, which is tomwoods.com/2149, I'll link to your website and also your Twitter, because I think you've got a great account to follow, not only for your own posts, but I like the service that somebody provides me of basically curating some of the COVID news for me through retweets and stuff. And so when I look on there, I get good results. So your Twitter handle, though, is Kelly, KelleyKGA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Kelly, KelleyK for your last initial, and then GA for Georgia.
Yes.
But make no mistake, everybody, this is not an account exclusively for people who live in Georgia.
Yeah,
okay? I don't live in Georgia.
It shifted a lot. Early on, it was, I mean, I was focused a lot on the Georgia data. As, you know, things have changed with the pandemic, there's a lot less Georgia-specific information that is even really worth. I mean, I post usually weekly on my website with kind of an update, but on Twitter, there's a lot less Georgia-specific information and a lot more lately of kids and, you know, the CDC and kind of the more national picture as we've changed to kind of a different phase in the pandemic, I would say.
All right. Well, I've got the information up at tomwoods.com/2149. Kelly, thanks for your time today and for your tireless work on this important cause.
Thank you.
All right, folks, coming up on the program tomorrow, I'm going to do an episode all by myself. And we're going to talk about, yes, I know it's a topic that we return to quite a bit, but I'm going to try to do a bottom-up discussion of the Federal Reserve, given that we're dealing with the consequences of what it does right now, and it's evident all around us. I want to talk about it, and I want to answer some of the common arguments you're going to hear. If you say we need to end the Fed, people will say, well, what about this? What about that? I'm going to give you the answer to what about this and what about that. So I hope you enjoy that. And if you like and appreciate the old Tom Woods Show, I got many, many benefits to give you as a supporter of the Tom Woods Show. How do you become a supporter? I mean, I know it's the top priority you have right now. How do I become a supporter of the Tom Woods Show? You go to supportinglisteners.com. You get transcripts of all the interviews I do, but you get way, way, way more than that. Well, I mean, way more. I mean, you got to scroll for like 5 years to see all the benefits you get as a supporter of the Tom Woods Show. So go check that out, supportinglisteners.com, talking about the Fed tomorrow. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.